Astrobiology Institute. Big Picture Science is produced at the SETI Institute, and a big thanks also to our listeners.
Your ears have been attuned to life in space. Hit it, Reverb.
Ace.
And you can find more Big Picture Science on iTunes and through the link on our website. While you're online, you may want to check out and even download our Big Picture Science app. It's found on iTunes, Android, and Windows 8.
And if you're a podcast listener, but you prefer over-the-air radio because, after all, it feels more intelligent, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station is not on that list, consider letting them know that you like the show.
So, Nakolarku Bar. Shorg Fleeboot is with Snaku Bartender Gis. What do you have? Unshalikskor glamo binjorad, we don't serve shukabahi gag.
We are Millish. You're listening to 89.3
WHFR
Dearborn.
WHFR, 30 years old. You don't even look a day over 29.
The following program is pre-recorded. It does not reflect the views of Henry Ford College, WHFR radio station, staff, or members.
There are more than 50 million people in America who are doing some level of caregiving.
Many times you'll find caregivers who don't actually know that they're a caregiver yet.
They do not think of themselves as caregiver, they think of themselves as family. I'm just taking care of mom.
So if you have someone who needs help with bathing, dressing, grooming, walking, transferring, any of those kinds of things, chances are you are a caregiver. The majority of people who have long-term care needs are serviced at home.
They don't realize a lot of times that the other person is losing momentum and slowing down so much. They just realize that they seem to be doing more and more for this person, and this person seems more and more unable to get these things done for themselves.
Most people are very loving and good-natured and inclined to do what they can to keep their loved one at home and comfortable and well cared for, and they just don't see how it's slowly ratcheting up and impacting their lives.
There is some pretty scary statistical analysis that's been done of healthcare conditions and caregivers. They are absolutely more prone to depression. If they are suffering from some chronic disease, they manage it less well.
Family caregivers don't take care of themselves, and if we fall apart, not only are we mismanaging our own body in our own life, but if we fall apart, then what happens?
I had an older gentleman who was at home and very disabled. The wife caregiver was not willing to accept in-home help. And I think we were all convinced that it clearly was the stress of providing that care that really led to her demise.
Our society has become so complex and fragmented. The structures aren't set up to create a one-stop shopping. So it really puts a tremendous burden on the individual to find the resources and become sort of the hub of the wheel.
When we talk of caregivers, we're talking about the long haul. We're talking about a marathon, sometimes 10, 20, 30 years if you're talking about younger people with disabilities. I think that it is sometimes very unrealistic to think that a caregiver without additional support is going to be able to do it.
It's a big issue financially, because it is expensive to be a caregiving family. The market value of what caregivers do is worth well over $300 billion a year. So it's not just a personal issue. It is very much an economic issue, and it is very much a healthcare issue.
On a little journey. We're going to go back to the year 1960 and visit my parents' dairy farm in central Kansas. It's early June, and we're actually very excited because we have prospects for the best wheat harvest ever. There's even been talk of taking a vacation. And then, one afternoon, as it does in Kansas, big, ominous storm clouds started building in the southwest. We watched the clouds with a mixture of dread and hope, fearing what was going to happen and hoping that somehow we would be spared. When the rain started, it came in huge, heavy drops that quickly turned into hailstones the size of my fist. And it moved through quickly, probably lasted less than 15 minutes. But by the time it was over, our crops and our primary source of income for that year were gone. That was the year that my mother discovered she hated the farm. She hated the cows, she hated the flies, she hated the smell, and she hated being poor. But she loved my father. She had four children, and divorce was not an option. So she had to figure out a way to make it work. She did two things that year that changed her life. She got a job in town, and she became a devotee of self-help books. So every day at 5 o'clock when she would come home from work, she would rush into the house, change out of her business clothes, into her work clothes, and we would go straight to the milk barn. And it was in the pit of that barn that she started to share with me everything she was learning and reading about faith and about the power of positive thinking. So if you're brave enough, come along with me and we'll go out to the barn. Now, our barn, by 1960 standards, was actually quite modern. It was solid concrete, and it had two lanes that could each accommodate three cows at a time. And in the middle, there was this sunken pit, which was just the greatest new invention because it elevated the cows and it put the udders right about this level. I was 9 years old, and I hadn't learned how to milk yet, so I was sitting on the steps into the pit. And had you been there with me that night, you would have seen my mother, who was 37 years old, and an attractive woman, although you might not have guessed it if this was your first time to see her, because she wore black rubber boots up to here, yellow rubber gloves up to here, and since cows weren't especially delicate when it came to their personal elimination, she had this funky shower cap with simulated brass earrings right here to keep the manure splatters out of her hair. So I have such a clear image of her on the night that she told me about Viktor Frankl, a survivor of a Nazi concentration camp who wrote about his experiences in his book, Man's Search for Meaning. And as she stood there, reaching an old grungy rag into a bucket of soapy water and then washing the manure off of the cow's teats, she started to tell me about Mr. Frankl's experience. And when she got to the point of the story, she tossed the rag into the bucket. And she turned to me in just absolute reverence to Mr. Frankl. She quoted him when he said, "They had taken away our families, our homes, our businesses, even our clothes." And as we stood there in all of our miserable nakedness, I realized there was only one thing in my life over which I had any control. And that was my attitude. Viktor Frankl became my mother's personal hero. And it was knowing that she had the power to choose her attitude toward any person, thing, or event that gave her the emotional strength and courage to get through a lot of difficult years. And it also gave her what she needed to perform what I consider to be, and what all of you already know, is one of the most incredibly difficult and generous acts of love any of us will ever perform on behalf of another. And that is the act of caregiving. So, just to let you know, a little side note, I always called my parents Madeline and Quentin. I'm sorry, I called them Mom and Dad, but for the sake of this presentation, I'm going to refer to them as Madeline and Quentin because I want you to think of them as whole people, not parents. fast forward with me 33 years. Madeline is 70 years old. She has a little cottony puff of white hair that barely conceals her scalp. She's losing her vision because of macular degeneration. She has osteoporosis. She has a scar that goes from here to here from open heart surgery, from which she's not fully recovered. She has a difficult time sleeping at night because of her restless leg syndrome. But the thing that is making her crazy and frustrating her beyond belief is the severe hearing loss that's been brought on by the medication that she's taking for her heart. And then, on October 30th, 1993, Quentin had a stroke, and she became his caregiver. I can just picture her the morning she wrote this letter. She would have been wearing her apron because, of course, she wanted to keep her clothes clean because washing them wears them out, right? And I can see her standing at her kitchen sink just fuming. She was probably washing dishes and then slamming them into the drainer. This is what she said. I am so upset over the advice that is being given to people today about doing your own thing and to hell with everybody else. I think that's the reason that there's a lot of divorces and unhappiness in this world right now. When I look back over my life, it's hard for me to think of anything that I've done just for myself. And as an old lady, I'm here to tell anyone who will listen that life is not made up of doing what you want to do. I can't see anything so wonderfully exciting or invigorating about getting up in the morning, fixing breakfast, doing the dishes, doing the laundry, doing the housework, picking up the papers, helping your father, fixing lunch, doing the dishes, doing more laundry, more housework, and more paperwork, and helping your father. An exciting day for me might include having a good telephone conversation or possibly running into somebody I know in the grocery store or on the street. And for this, I should take vitamins, I should exercise and eat right so I can prolong this wonderful life experience? Ha! My joy in life comes from growing mentally and spiritually. And the thing that I've learned and discovered about having your peace and happiness from within is that a person can stay more or less detached and still do what has to be done to give other people a reasonable amount of happiness. I believe that this detached attitude was one of the things that allowed her to get through her caregiving experience. She later came to call it an attitude of creative indifference. And when I said, "What's the difference between detached and creative indifference?" she said, "Same thing." She said, "I just like the phrase creative indifference because detached seems cold." She said, "Whatever you call it, what it means is not allowing yourself to become emotionally ravaged by the disease or the progression of events." I came across something about a year ago that made me think of Madeline and of all other caregivers. And it was a quote from Edna St. Vincent Millay. And she said, "It's not true that life is one damn thing after another. It's actually one damn thing over and over and over again."
Okay. I'm Pat Rencher. I sit on the Michigan Commission on Services to the Aging.
Okay. And we also have in the studio with us Katie Graham. And I got that right this time, Katie. I didn't try to make you Kathy.
I answer to just about everything, Betty.
Okay. And Katie, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, Katie Graham. I'm the program manager and managing attorney for the Elder Law and Advocacy Center at Neighborhood Legal Services, Michigan.
All right. We had Katie on Impact. Again, I want to welcome our guests and audience, listening audience to Impact, which is aired every fourth Tuesday on WHFR.FM. And Katie Graham was our speaker last month, and she was dealing with the Elder Law Agency. Is that an agency or
We are an agency,
okay,
yes.
Okay, all right, our Elder Law Agency. And during that discussion, she was letting us know that there was a conference coming up that was addressing elder abuse. And she's holding up a flyer to me. Katie, give me the correction. What is it now?
Okay, this caregiver conference is not specifically dealing with elder abuse. There's another conference to deal with elder abuse coming up June 26th.
All right. Okay. So there were three different conferences. That's what it was. There was a number of conferences coming up, and I've got the wrong one. So let's deal with the one that's going to be coming up in May. Okay. That's the one, the 16th, and that's the Caregivers Conference. Okay.
All right.
Now, what is the Caregivers Conference about, Katie?
It is sort of a one-stop shop for people who are helping to care for someone who may be older, vulnerable, or has a disability, raising grandchildren. It is a resource stop as well as very informational speakers talking about different issues, mental health issues, legal issues. And it's designed to give the caregiver steps to take to make their journey a lot easier and a lot safer for both them and the person they're caring for.
Okay, and Patricia, how are you involved with this?
Well, I'm the conference planner.
Okay.
And I've assembled these fine folks who are really the experts to bring the information to the Detroit community.
Okay. Now, go ahead.
People are really struggling with caregiving. It's an all-encompassing, overwhelming experience. And we'd like to give people the opportunity to go one place in one day and learn as much as they can. And from there, they've got a good foundation.
All right. I remember when I was talking to you before, while we were waiting for Katie, you were telling me about your experience getting into this caregiver position. Could you share with our listeners how you got involved, your experiences as a caregiver?
Well, yeah, because it just kind of made sense that I was already involved in human services as a grant proposal writer and program developer, but when my mom first got sick 11 years ago, and had to go into a nursing home, I was sort of appalled and overwhelmed and thought, oh my goodness, we've got to fix this. And around the same time, my dad began to decline, and he was attempting to age in place at the home. So there I was with both of them. And so I told you I called the guy that was the then director, who is currently the director of the Institute of Gerontology at Wayne State, and asked him to come over and meet with families.
Okay.
Who I'd assembled. And next thing I knew, I began to work for him, but I did a lot of community education during my 8-year stint at the Institute of Gerontology.
All right. Now, okay, so how you and Katie connected and around trying to get this conference together? Is that how the two of you got together? Or?
We go way back.
Essentially, yes. Everybody in the aging world knows Katie Grant.
Oh, my.
She's just elder law around town.
Okay, but see, Katie's only 22, right?
Exactly. And she's been doing this for a long time, very well respected within the aging community. And so I thought it would be a good idea to pull Katie together and two other agencies, Bridging Communities, which serves a lot of older Detroiters in Southwest Detroit, and the Neighborhood Service Organization, which is serving older adults near the Northwest Activity Center.
Okay. Now, what are some of the, you know, I think now because we've got this older population, okay, and that runs, it used to be that, you know, back in the day it was 55, but now it's pushed up to 67. Is it that the official?
For Social Security retirement, it's around that age,
right?
Yes,
right.
When you were born.
Right, right. But the issues around aging start before 67 or can occur before 67. And we've got two categories, if I am defining this correctly. You've got children who may be in their early 50s who have parents who are in 70s and above. So you've got this gap, this kind of like age range going on. So you've got the caregiver is suffering with some of the similar problems of people that they're trying to care for. Isn't that some of the issues that's going on?
That absolutely can be the case. We had one caregiver come to a program we have to address legal needs, and she came with her mother and grandmother. And her grandmother was in a whole lot better shape than her mother. She worked full time. I saw her getting out of her car, getting a walker for grandma and a wheelchair for mom. It took so long, it was really just hard to watch. And she did this every single day with a full-time job and cooked all of their meals and took them to all of their appointments. Mm-hmm. It was amazing to see the struggle she was going through. A lot of people are raising children besides full-time jobs and taking care of aging parents or other relatives. Mm-hmm. A lot of spouses are taking care of a spouse, and they're both in their 80s or even 90s. Mm-hmm. And it's a very, very tough job for a younger person to do. I've met people in their 80s trying to take care of their spouse with Alzheimer's, and it was really literally going to kill them.
All right. Said something of what the caregiver's conference is addressing. So there's what I'm hearing is there's a lot of different levels and a lot of different things to address. How do you decide, you know, how do you put this in some kind of order? And I guess, Pat, I'm, you know, either one of you can jump in as to, you know, as you talk.
Well, yeah, and I think what we've done is we've put this in the top three issues that are impacting older adults. So, of course, everybody needs to know about elder law. And Katie and I were talking earlier about there are some myths around the kinds of things that people should do. And Katie can speak to this later about a couple of the myths that people think they're doing protecting their assets, but they're not. Another major issue is the whole issue around community-based supports. Mm-hmm. So in other words, what happens is a lot of people say, oh, I just don't want to end up in the nursing home. Well, the way policy is running these days, it is less likely that you'll end up in a nursing home. It's more likely that you will receive care at home.
Right.
And so there are a whole array of programs and services that people can get within their home, but they need to know about them to access them.
And
so
yes,
there's one workshop specifically targeting community, what we call community-based long-term care options.
Okay.
And then the third one is, caregivers have a high incidence of depression.
Yes.
And so the third workshop is centered around mental health issues that could either impact the caregiver or the care recipient. And so we have experts who will talk about, clinicians who will talk about depression, substance abuse, and suicide, which seems to impact the caregiver as well.
Okay, and you said that's two. Now, is that, did you make a distinction? I got the community resources and then the communal health, and is there a third issue?
Legal. And the third is elder law.
Oh, aha. Legal okay, issues. All right, okay. What? How did you come to be making those the three priorities?
Because the issues that all caregivers deal with.
Okay. All right. How do now this conference that's coming up is open to just the professionals who are involved in this, or is it the caregiver people who are?
No, it's for the everyday person, the person who is out there caregiving their elderly loved one in isolation, who doesn't have a clue about what's available. So it's for the common everyday person who is overwhelmed and needs the information.
All right. Now, one of the things that I have become aware of, because I have one of my other hats, when Katie was calling in, I was giving her the name of another hat. But one of my other hats is that I have worked in independent residence. And what I'm finding out is that the mental health thing is really a catch-22, because if you're not acutely ill, and sometimes, and you said depression, we have dementia, we have Alzheimer's. These are some of the prevalent things that are occurring up on, and they're not as necessarily, when people say mental health, they think crazy. But Pat said depression. And then,
anything can trigger or exacerbate depression. And what are some of the things that, I guess, well, Patricia, you were talking about it when you were trying to deal with your our parents. Did you go through some of this? And, you know, how did you kind of finally begin to reach out to others? I know you went to gerontology. But what about somebody who's not savvy in that area? How does, you know, what are some of the things you've encountered?
Well, one of the things that I learned was that that just being in isolation, doing something in isolation and unable to get out, and caregivers are very guilty of not asking for help, that there is Medicare-funded mental health counseling that's available, for instance.
Okay.
And that's some of the kind of thing you'll learn at the conference.
Okay.
There's people who are practicing and can come to your home and help you get out of that that depression.
Okay. Okay, for Medicare, so that means that the caregiver as well as the family member, the person they're caring for, can both get this? Because, you know, I might be depressed, but I ain't going to tell my daughter nothing because then she's going to try to take over. Okay.
Well, you know, yeah, either one. Yeah.
Sure. And the caregiver is most likely going to be the one to notice that about mom or dad and not notice it about themselves. So that's why we're focusing on helping the caregiver here, but you're always doing double duty. You're helping the caregiver, and in turn, the person who's receiving care is getting a whole lot more help. When you ease the caregiver's burden and give them resources, they can do a much better job. And, you know, in addition to other mental health issues, one of the biggest ones is stress.
Okay.
And knowing resources and where to turn. And Pat's very integrated into this community and knows how to pull the resources together for caregivers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, like I said at the beginning, it's kind of a one-stop shop. And if somebody can't find exactly what they need there, they're going to find someone who knows.
Now, there is also an legal issue to that, because guardianship comes under that. You know, if my parent is starting to show dementia, get Alzheimer's, okay, but they don't want to get care, you know, there's a legal implication in all of this as well. Okay.
There are a lot of legal issues that people really don't recognize as being legal issues. They just think, well, I need to go to court and start taking care of my mother. I've got to get the court to give me guardianship. We pride ourselves on avoiding any unnecessary guardianships and try to get to people before the person who may have been diagnosed with some sort of dementia like Alzheimer's, before they progress to the level where it's too late for them to do their own legal planning.
Mm-hmm.
We're definitely for everybody's own individual autonomy. We have, you know, rights, and we're here as a law office to protect their rights. If someone has been diagnosed, the time for them to do their planning is right now, because even if a doctor says somebody has become, well, they'll probably say incompetent. We mm-hmm. use the word incapacitated. Even if a doctor has said that, we've met with people and found that, you know, maybe they were when they visited with that doctor last week, and that could have been stress and nerves and everything exacerbating the problem. But when we met with them, maybe a different time of day, a different week altogether, we found that they still had legal capacity, could do their own planning, and then we can help with that planning at our office, and thereby avoid the need for court involvement in their life in the future, avoid having the court appoint a guardian who would be in charge of handling their affairs, and they themselves would be stripped of their rights to handle their own.
All right. Pat, when the families, sometimes families can't agree, okay, and that's another thing of a caregiver, and that's another part of the stressor. And I'm saying Pat, but I'm also saying Katie and Pat, where you have one family member thinks they should be in charge, another one thinks that they should be in charge. What are some of the alternatives that you think, you know, based, you know, your experience that with how caregivers can come to some kind of meeting ground, or is there, will the workshop address that kind of thing of how to do a corporate caregiver process, or how that, you know, what was some of your experience?
Well, you know, I'm glad you asked that, because the nurse with a 35-year career in nursing is actually going to be the moderator for the community-based long-term care options workshop. And part of what she talks a lot about is sibling rivalry and just families learning how to coordinate the care of their loved ones in a civil and loving way. So, yeah, that's always part of the consideration in any and all of this.
Okay.
And if it, you know, we always strive to see everything handled in a civil way, but sometimes it's just not going to happen. If that's the case, then there certainly are resources for things like mediation, mm-hmm. which bring about a result short of going to court,
okay.
bring about a result that everyone hopefully buys into that process and agrees with it. It's different than the adversarial court process. It's where everyone's agreeing. These mm-hmm. are common, you know, ground points,
okay.
and we can agree on this and go forward with less intrusive measures.
All right. Now, this type, is that through the probate court system, or is that through what other system?
Well, elder law, an overview, general overview, it encompasses issues that become important to people who are getting older. Generally, they're realizing their mortality,
mm-hmm.
so it encompasses a lot of planning for what will happen if I become incapacitated,
mm-hmm.
What happens after I die.
Okay.
It also encompasses, there's a lot of legal issues related to choosing different living arrangements, either
mm-hmm.
in your own home, or if you need to move to assisted living or to the nursing home. There are a lot of legal issues and benefits and resources that people need to know about ahead of time before they go to a nursing home, and they could have perhaps stayed in their home with some supports and services that are available. For example, the My Choice Waiver Program, which I'm sure the long-term care supports person is going to touch upon that at the conference, which
okay.
is a way to keep people in their home, to know about VA benefits that can help keep people in their home so they don't have to go unnecessarily or prematurely to a nursing home. But it also, I sort of see it as two main issues, planning for the possibility of incapacity, and that involves having documents drafted for you, hopefully by a Michigan licensed attorney.
Okay.
And then planning for the possibility of needing different living arrangements.
Okay. Now, this conference, is this an ongoing thing, or is this something that you just started up new? Because I know it's...
Well, actually, this is the second annual Detroit Caregiver Support Conference.
Okay.
So we did it last year, and we're refining it. And hopefully we'll do it again next year because there's definitely a need for it.
All right. There's that when Katie was talking about, you know, the living situation, a lot of people think about nursing homes, but there is something before nursing home, like you said, being able to care for your family member in their home. And the term age in place, okay, is something else I think that people need. This is another reason why I wanted the show to begin to get our audience familiar with some of these things that are age in place. And that is like, that's pre-nursing home, pre-assisted living, all right? All these different types of services that are available to the community that people just are not aware of.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Betty. I was just going to say that generally how we categorize it is that all of this is under the umbrella of long-term care.
Okay.
People used to think that just nursing homes were long-term care. Well, you have nursing homes, you have some assisted living facilities, and your own home can be where you're going to receive your long-term care.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about, you know, because mine is with independent residential placements. And now, has HUD kind of got a special category for where they're working with this whole process? And if so, how are they?
I'm not sure if HUD has. I know HUD has programs for service coordinators in buildings,
mm-hmm.
which you're very well aware
right,
of.
Right.
I don't know that they have anything that facilitates long-term care. There is a program that's under the Medicaid
mm-hmm.
Umbrella. That's called the My Choice Waiver Program
okay.
that allows for services, not 24-hour skilled care,
okay.
but services to be provided in a person's home with the whole view of keeping them in their home where most people want to stay. People would like to stay in independent living,
right.
usually, as long
right.
as possible.
Right.
Then, as I said earlier, there's some VA financial assistance that people can get. And then there's other various resources out there, like a home chore services,
okay.
care management programs.
All right.
People should contact their area agencies on aging.
All right.
But actually, I think if they come to this conference, they're going to see the area agency on aging, and they're also going to see a whole lot of these resources in person.
You know, we've been talking about this conference, so let's give our listening audience a little bit more information. It's called the Detroit Caregiver Support Conference.
And it says the second annual. If I just read, I'd be able to see things. Okay. And it's going to be at the Wayne County Community College, the Northwest Campus. That's on Otter Drive in Southfield. And it's free parking and admission is free. So I'm going to give our listeners a telephone number that they can call. The number.
And they must register. It's free, but you must register.
Okay.
And it is Detroit, actually.
Okay. All right. Okay. The telephone number is 313-355-7014. Again, the telephone number, and Pat, let us know that you must register to attend, is 313-355-7014. And if there are people in the community who want to make our listening audience aware of some of the things that they have to offer towards this venture, there are sponsorship and exhibit tables that are available. And you would call this number. It's 313-204-5140. And I will be repeating those numbers later on. So those of you who are listening, get your pen and pencils, and I'll be repeating you, giving this information again a little bit later on in the program. But it's the
There's also a website that we can refer people to if they want to look up more information about this.
Okay, and that website is?
www.DetroitCaregiversSupport.com. So it's Detroit Caregiver Support, all as one word, .com.
Okay, all right. And now that something else that we're talking about caregivers and the care supports, are there support groups, community? I got two questions. Let me go back to the first question first. There's this Catch-22 group who don't qualify for Medicaid, okay? I say too poor, too rich to be poor, and too poor to be rich, right? Are you beginning to see some of this, and what are some of the things that you know that might be offered? You know, are these services still, you know, like My Choice and stuff, or is that just for Medicaid? And what about that Catch-22 group?
Well, you know, I think a lot of people, and this is something else that you'll learn at the conference, that when the Older Americans Act was established in 1965, it set up and mandated the area agencies on aging across the country, that all of those programs are open to all older adults, regardless of income.
Okay.
Now, of course, that's getting us in a lot of trouble with the baby boomers, but most of the programming is provided to folks who are 60 and older.
Okay.
And so, and in some cases, with some of the AAAs, we call them, Area Agencies on Aging, they're providing some of the programming on a sliding scale.
Okay.
So people need to know that that Catch-20, that population that you were talking about, they still have access to a lot of this program.
Okay. All right. Also, that Catch-22, this also is kind of a way of them getting educated, as Pat was telling me earlier, getting educated on what the alternatives are, and probably also the getting them into a part of a networking support system.
Yeah, I would love it. I would love it if my contemporaries, my peers, what we call the young old, the 50 to 65-year-olds, if they would come to this conference so that they could learn and just be apprised of what's available.
Okay.
And you may not currently need the service, but come learn, put it in your file bank, and for a later time.
Okay.
If you're not a caregiver now, you're very likely going to be one in the future. And if that doesn't happen, you're likely going to need one.
We all need
this information.
Yes. And now, this process of addressing and focusing on the caregivers, are there other support collaborative agencies that are working along with you, and other kinds of agencies that are working with you besides?
Specifically
well,
for
we
the
do
conference.
Have what we call the Aging Network.
Okay.
And the Aging Network consists of the local area agency on aging and all of the other kinds of agencies, including people like Katie, who provide services.
Okay.
So anywhere from support groups to elder law consultation to chore services, all of them are part of the Aging Network.
All right. And Katie, you were going to say something, too?
Oh, I thought you were referring specifically to the conference, and I want to reiterate, we have two other agencies helping us specifically put the conference together and put our minds together on what's the best information and resources to have available, and that's neighborhood service organization and bridging communities. And Pat pulled us all together because we have similar and yet enough differences that we make a good melted down group that can provide a lot of services and bring a lot of information to the conference and other people with expertise. The caregivers, as Pat said, definitely should be coming, you know, as young as they think. Some people, you know, have aging parents when they're young, you mm-hmm. know. They should all come and get the information ahead of time before they're hit with this on a Friday night when mom's being discharged from a hospital and they say you've got to put her in a nursing home. That does not give you the time to do your homework and look up the resources and find out how you're going to be able to pay for it or not pay for it. So getting the resources ahead of time is going to really, really make that journey a lot easier.
You know, and another thing that I think that we're looking at the person that's being cared for, but and we've been alluding to it as during this discussion, but we're also is the fact that the caregiver begins to, if they don't watch out, they're going to be needing care as well. All right, and I am assuming that when you do deal with this community resources, also the mental health part about it is for the caregiver to get a realistic picture of just what's involved in caregiving.
Absolutely. That's a great point.
Okay. Which is something else that I heard Pat, you know, Pat some, I said she, you know, she pulled all her family together, but that does not necessarily work. You know, we got the seven, you know, and the old age, you know, the site, you know, our facades come down when things we used to hide and wouldn't talk about mm-hmm. come out in the wash. But what are some of the, the vulnerable spots that caregivers have that they really don't, sometimes are not aware of, that either of you are familiar with?
I guess every situation can present unique ones. I had one caregiver who had been a victim of domestic violence her whole life mm-hmm. at the hands of her husband. And he had now been diagnosed with dementia, probably Alzheimer's, mm-hmm. and was in his early 90s. And she said now she can finally outrun him. So taking care of him was a real struggle. I mean, you just hurt for somebody who lived in that situation all that time. And her only relief is that she's now stronger than him mm-hmm. and hasn't been her whole life. I had an 85-year-old woman come to me and tell me she was not a caregiver. And I was kind of surprised. I said, okay, well, your husband's in a nursing home. She said, yes. I said, well, I'm sure you visit. She said, oh, yeah, I go every single day. And I said, for how long every single day? She said, 7 to 8 hours. I said, why such a specific amount of time? She said, because the nursing home told me I had to take one shift to take care of him. So she was about to be killed at the hands of this nursing home, right. giving an 85-year-old woman a job that's extremely tough on a much younger person to
right.
do,
right.
a professional job.
Right, right, right. And they don't have the professional training nor the professional backup.
Right.
Okay, because the difference, and that's what's the particular residence that I'm associated with, is that they're independent. All right, so it's like an apartment living. It's just that everybody in the apartment is over 62.
Mm-hmm.
And family members are coming, you know, and staying all night and this type of thing, and then trying to work with them to let them know that, you know, you need to first acknowledge that this is not the best way to do things. All right. But bringing them to that awareness, you know, of, you know, people don't recognize caregiving. I'm just taking care of mom.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or, mm-hmm. It's my responsibility and nobody else is supposed to do it. And all they see is nursing home.
Absolutely.
Okay? Okay.
Or that's my spouse. I'm not taking care of him. That's my spouse. We've done that for each other our whole lives.
Or the reverse part is the spouse doesn't want anyone else to do it except this one particular person.
Oh, yes, that's very much an issue.
Okay. And that's another part of the educational process, is that the caregivers have to become aware, okay, and sit down and realistically look at what this is in the year of in 20th and 21st century, where your cousins may be and your sister may be in California.
Mm-hmm.
Her husband's family may have issues. Here you are in Detroit, and there's all these nuances.
Yes. As Pat said earlier, they really need to summon the courage to ask for help. A lot of people are just waiting to be asked. They may feel like if they offer, they're, you know, barging in on someone's life or making them feel like they're not doing a good job and they must need help. When really we have found a lot of people are sitting back just saying, I wish I knew what to do. I wish they would come to me and say, can you make a meal tonight? Can you give me a break tomorrow so I can go to a show? Or can you give me a break so I can take care of some extra laundry or whole kinds of things, all kinds of things that they call it respite care. And that too is part of the aging network Pat is referring to. There's all kinds of resources like that that caregivers just need to arm themselves with, and best time to do it is before you become a caregiver.
Okay.
I agree. And I just wanted to add, if I could, that the services and supports that we'll be talking about at the conference are not specific to Detroit. So although we're holding this in Detroit, these services are available throughout the state, throughout the country, a lot of them.
Okay.
And that equally that our sponsors are the Alzheimer's Association, which of course will provide respite care for the older adults and their care recipients.
Mm-hmm.
Presbyterian Villages of Michigan, which is an independent living of Michigan that provides independent living.
Okay.
Wayne County Community College and the Detroit Area Agency on Aging are all of our sponsors. Okay. Are helping us to get this word out.
All right. Now, last year, what was your conference focus last year?
Well, it's the same thing every time.
Okay.
It's the same thing. The keynote speaker and some of the panelists may vary. Like I said, last year, the keynote speaker focused on sibling rivalry. This year's keynote speaker is Alinda Kilman from Michigan State University, Dr. Linda Kilman, and she'll talk about caregiving and spirituality.
Okay. Okay.
With humor.
Okay.
That's a very important point, Pat. You've got to bring humor to this. It's just such a stressful situation.
Okay. Well, listen, I want to thank both of my guests for sharing your knowledge and expertise. And I know that every time I know Katie, she's going to say, no, I'm not an expert. But I think, and then that's a part of it, is becoming increasing the awareness, increasing the knowledge of the fact that there is this thing now called caregivers. And it's a totally different thing in the year, 2015 than it was in the year 1915, all right? We have people who are who are living into the 80s. And so now what was old age is a gamut. It ranges from the late 50s on up, okay? And
recently a woman in Inkster turned 116, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she did.
So it's
right. And then her child is, 85, and that child is 65, and all of them to the are three different categories of, the senior. So we got, all those different things. And the main thing that I'm getting out of this is that the caregivers conference is just beginning to educate the awareness and the realities of what this is about, and also giving the people who are going to have to deal with or are in the process of dealing with this what it is, what it means, what it is, and what what the supports are, what you can do. Is there anything that either one of you want to give our listeners before we do the final closing knock? Pat, we'll go with you first. Did you think?
Okay. Well, I just want to make sure that people know that there's a phone number. You can register either through the phone number or you can register online.
Okay. And that telephone number is 313-355-7014, or you can go online for Detroit Caregiver Support. That's all one name, .com. And those who are interested in being a sponsor or want the exhibits, the telephone number is 313-204-5140. And you can also call into the station in case you happen to want to get further additional referrals. Katie, what about you? Anything you want to leave our listeners with?
I just really want to encourage everybody to know that you can come and get resources and very, very good tools. My office does free legal assistance for people 60 and older who live in Wayne County. You're going to find a lot of our counterparts providing other services. Come and get the tools that will make your journey a whole lot easier and safer.
Okay. And Elder Law, if they want to contact Elder Law,
Our telephone number is 313-937-8255. 2291. That's the Elder Lawn Advocacy Center of Neighborhood Legal Services, Michigan.
Okay. And Patricia, okay. And Pat, now, are you with the Commerce specifically itself? Is that how you want to be identified, or is there another contact number for you?
That's fine. Just what we did initially.
Okay. Thank you very much. Again, well, thank you, ladies, very much for being a part of the Guest of Impact. And to our listeners, make sure you stay tuned for Intact. Stay tuned for Impact. And we'll see you at the next fourth Tuesday. This is Betty Daniels saying good afternoon. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Scott Solkoff, an elder law attorney in Delray Beach. I'm going to talk to you today. The purpose of this video is to focus on you, the caregiver, because being a caregiver can be among the most demanding, most difficult jobs in the world, but also among the most satisfying, things you can ever do with your life. But it is rife with so many caregivers are silently suffering from depression and isolation and even a loss of identity. So I'm going to talk to you today about ways to be a better caregiver while also taking control of your own life, taking back control of your own life. So, you know, being a caregiver means sacrifice. It means giving things up. It means loss of income, in many cases, significantly. I have clients who have, you know, quit their jobs or are taking significant losses of income in order to take care of a loved one. But they feel they have to, and they do. It can mean problems with family dynamics, significant causes of problems among families, where one person, by accident of geography or other reasons, becomes the primary caregiver, and the rest of the family just doesn't seem to get it. Maybe they're farther away, or maybe they're involved in their own lives, or maybe they're right there and just not doing as much as you think you are, or vice versa, and it creates much rifts among families, opens old wounds, and causes people to fight about things they never thought they would fight about, including money, and affection, and competition for that affection. So, you know, being sensitive to those issues becomes really important. Also, being a caregiver means stress. It means significant stress, that causes problems in one's own health, problems with depression, and other maladies. But it can also be being a caregiver. It can be one of the most greatest deeds, mitzvahs that you can do with your life, because without you, that person would not have the quality of life that they have with you. So I'm going to take my cheat sheet and I'm going to sit back and have a little chat with you, and I hope that you will take what I say to heart, because I have learned so much over 14 years of doing this from my clients. So, along with the sacrifice, you know, we can focus on all the bad, but, you know, bottom line is, and I know this from talking to my clients, being a caregiver can also bring a tremendous sense of satisfaction and honor. Imagine having lost a loved one, being able to look back and the pride of knowing that you made your loved one's life better, that their quality of life at end of life was better because of what you did and because of your sacrifice. And in fact, I would think that without making that effort, there would be maybe more of a sense of guilt. Although, you know, each of us has to make these decisions ourselves about what we're capable of doing and who we are and who the person we're caring for is. So some tips to make it better. Above all, while we go through these tips, I have only, you know, one commandment. And that commandment is, thou shalt not feel guilty. Thou shalt not feel guilty. You cannot do everything. And you can say to yourself, I shouldn't have gone out to dinner with my spouse last night. I shouldn't have spent that time with my children. I should have been there when mom fell. But the fact of the matter is you will always feel guilty. You can never do it all. You will never be able to feel like you're doing enough. But you have to remember, and this will help, that there are at least two lives involved here, yours and the person you're caring for. And sacrificing one's own life for the other is not what it's about and not what that other person would or should expect of you. So, number one tip, first tip, set boundaries. Set boundaries of time, space, and emotion. Be able to say to yourself and the family and the person you're caring for that, you know, I'm off tomorrow. Tomorrow's my day. Or from 4 to 7, I'm spending time with myself. I'm going to do that. And stay true to those boundaries. Of course, there are exceptions when your loved one really needs you and there's an emergency, you have to be there. But by being able to set time for yourself, by honoring your own personhood, you're going to be a better caregiver and you're going to feel so much better. And it'll save you from possible depression and other problems that could adhere. So set those boundaries for yourself. Write them down. Make a list of the things that are bothering you, that concern you, that would add to your quality of life, which in turn will allow you to be a better caregiver to your loved one. Balance sanity and security with the preservation of your loved one's independence. All right, this is a big issue. When you're caregiving, it's very easy for well-intentioned, especially adult children and other caregivers to be very patronistic to your loved one who's receiving the care, by telling them how it's going to be, or by taking too much control and really thereby relieving that person of their own independence and say-so and sometimes dignity. So being mindful that you do not want to interfere with or take away that person's sense of self-worth, even with encroaching dementia, you can still make that person feel empowered and important, and that's very valuable. But at the same time, you can't let that person, especially a person with dementia, dictate the terms of caregiving. I can't tell you how many times I have heard from dear clients that they're taking care of their mother or their father or somebody else, and that person is refusing basic care devices, or, you know, for example, bringing in a home health aide for respite for you, the caregiver, but where the person's refusing that caregiver, or the person's refusing the assistance of home monitoring devices, or, you know, I've fallen, can't get up type of thing, and just being stubborn about it. You've got to lay down the law and on a reasonable basis while still respecting that person. And this goes along with boundaries also. You should be able to avail yourself, tip number three, avail yourself of community resources that can make a difference in your life. And if the other person, if the person you're caring for is resistant to those things, sometimes you have to lay down the law of this is the way it's going to be. Now, of course, it's different in every case, but many times being a little more adamant about what's necessary can be helpful. Well, for example, there are adult daycare programs which would give you, the caregiver, some respite. There are, you can bring in a home health aide to give yourself some time to go out and get something. There are caregiver support groups which you yourself can sit down with and talk to a counselor who moderates a group of other people who are going through the very same thing you are going through, many of whom could give you valuable lessons and you in turn giving them lessons, which feels pretty darn good. But in order to be able to do those things, you sometimes need to be strict and be able to tell the person you're caring for that this is the way it's going to be if you're going to continue to sacrifice your own self for their betterment. Another thing, value your efforts, but not financially. Okay? It's very easy for caregivers, and this is especially true in family situations, to overvalue their services or to think I should be getting more money. I should be getting more than my sister, my good-for-nothing sister who's doing nothing for mom. But caregiving, providing care for a loved one and inheritances or other monies are completely separate issues. And in order for you to be healthy about this, believe me when I tell you, you've really got to look at yourself as doing the service out of love and affection and honor and for satisfactions that go well beyond money, that'll be much more important to you in the long run than money. But money causes problems among families. Don't fall into that trap. If you are taking care of the finances of a loved one, make sure you keep really careful records and open the lines of communication to other family members, even if they are good for nothings and not doing anything to help you. because it will solve stop problems from happening and keep family peace. And in the end, most families care about that loved one getting the right care. So do these things. Keep these things in mind. Remember, thou shalt not feel guilty. Take that to the bank. Write that down. Post it on your refrigerator. And remember that always. So this is Scott Solkoff signing out with more tips and treasures on caregiving. I hope it's been helpful.
The following program is pre-recorded. It does not reflect the views of Henry Ford College, WHFR radio station, staff, or members.
Looking for some good news? Tune into Impact the second, fourth, and fifth Tuesdays of the month at 1 p.m. Impact is about individuals and groups making a positive difference in the community. You can hear that good news from Lynn and Betty, and who knows, you might be inspired to make an impact yourself. That's Impact every second, fourth, and fifth Tuesday at 1 p.m. right here on WHFR 89.3 FM, the station making waves.
This is Amanita.
And you're listening to WHFR Dearborn.
This is Garrett from the Mean Reds, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn.
This is the TED Radio Hour. Each week, groundbreaking TED Talks.
TED Talks.
TED.
Technology.
Entertainment.
Design.
Design.
Is that really what it stands for? I've never known that.
Delivered at TED conferences around the world.
It's the gift of the human imagination.
We've had to believe in impossible things.
The true nature of reality beckons just beyond.
Those talks, those ideas, adapted for radio. From NPR. I'm Guy Raz. Coming up,
underneath this wonderful sound was a pattern in a system.
The tornadoes hit about 19 communities.
Everything got scrambled.
Tornado tore up downtown.
Who would you say is in charge in this situation?
Like marbles spilling onto the floor.
It can create a synchronized moment.
We're all in it together.
This episode, Getting Organized. First, the news.
Henry Ford College provides a strong foundation for students pursuing a career in education, offering a two-year associate's degree in pre-education as well as pre-secondary and special education. For more information about HFC's pre-education degrees, please call 313-845-6430 or check out the pre-education program guide at hfcc.edu/pre.